Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We move it, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Ropa Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live, not per usual on a Wednesday, though. It is Saturday afternoon, kind of randomly. Figured I'd bang a show out today and catch up with the friendly folks of the Ropa Dope Radio Podcast fan base. Anyway, hope everybody is having a great weekend. I was on vacation since last Saturday. I did get back this week, but I think Thursday, but I hit the ground running, basically. I definitely was busy and wasn't able to do a show. I thought I'd be able to do one just a day later on Thursday, but certain things came up, yada, yada, yada. So anyway, I'm going to just do a quick show, right? There was so much action, it was kind of hard not to do a show. And I've gotten some messages like, man, where's the show? What, I want to hear your take on this or that or yada, yada, yada. So here we go. All right, let's focus in on this show. And obviously, it was a really busy, busy weekend in the sport, clearly. I mean, HBO, the PBC on Fox, Tuesday had a solid card, PBC on FS1, those toe-to-toe Tuesdays, and Showbox as well. Now, the Showbox for me got a little mixed up because we had a storm, and I was not able to catch enough of the main event to really give my take on it because there wasn't much recorded, basically. I did see the first couple fights, but I didn't really get to see a whole lot. And we will talk about, real quick, Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz and that whole debacle, which would be a great, great thing if they could figure it out. You know what I mean? If they could get that figured out, that would be sweet. That would be phenomenal, actually. I'm looking really way forward to that fight. If I think that they can make it happen, even though... I don't know. You know what I mean? It does seem like there is going to be some issues as far as stopping that card. That's what appears to be. So we'll talk about that stuff a little later. Like I said, it's literally going to be about an hour, maybe a little bit over. So I won't go in depth round by round as much unless it calls for it. In a tight fight. Let's start with the HBO card. Now, heading into the weekend, and I see Portland jumped on. I'm going to get his take in a short little bit here. I appreciate that on a Sunday afternoon. Just a random show that I'm doing. I did think, like I mentioned, that it was going to be postponed to Thursday, but my schedule got a little mixed up and wasn't able to do it. But anyway, heading into last weekend, which seems like a long time ago now. Sullivan Barrera versus Joe Smith Jr. was my favorite fight and the most anticipated fight for me. Now, did I think it'd be an all-out brawl per se? No, not necessarily. You know, not necessarily. But I just thought it was head and shoulders above the rest as far as 50-50, right? As far as... an equally matched fight on paper. No doubt about it. That's what I thought. I was wrong. I did pick Barrera to win. I mean, it's been so long. I believe I did. Because we're talking two Wednesdays ago now. But, yes, I did. I did pick Barrera, but I didn't think it'd be this one-sided. Now, we have to put in the equation, obviously, that Joe Smith Jr. had a damaged jaw. We're hearing reports now that he broke his jaw in the second round is what I'm hearing. Second or third round, I believe I heard. So you obviously have to put that into the equation. Could that have been a much better fight? Yes. It could have been a much better, closer two-way fight. But just to kind of talk about it real quick, Barrera was winning the round with clean shots. But a left hook landed late in that round by Smith, Joe Smith Jr., and it knocked Barrera down. And then he got up and he hit him with another left hook, and his legs didn't respond well. Let's put it that way. He wasn't hurt. He wasn't done. He wasn't out on his feet. That's not what I'm saying. But you could see, wow, okay. Even though he won that round, there's that equalizer, right? Barrera then after that really started getting to the body. And then up top with the flush straight right hands. There were some pretty good exchanges at times in this fight. But even after four rounds, the stat popped up 83 to 30 for punches landed and 22 to 11 after four rounds to the body in favor of Sullivan Barrera. So, the right hands were out there, no doubt about it. Every once in a while, there'd be a left hook. Generally, it came a little later in rounds from Joe Smith Jr. But between the bombing the right hand, right, he just methodically broke him down, did Sullivan Barrera. He brought his own left hook in as well. It was kind of strange, though. The promoters amongst themselves, I guess, they changed it. The day of the fight, I don't know if it was hours before or early or what, I don't know, but they changed it to a 10-rounder. And it was just kind of random. It was kind of random. You don't see that a whole lot. You do see it. It's just usually on, like, swing fights or prospect-level fights or late fights that get signed where they're like, you know what? We did have a little problem. It was going to be a 6-rounder, but there was some, you know, sometimes there's a late opponent that comes in. Sometimes people miss weight and they bring somebody in, whatever the case may be. Someone gets injured late or whatever. But that was that. Barrera just beat, 187 to 61 for punches landed at a 39% clip is very impressive. The scorecards were kind of strange, though. 96-93 was to me. All right, I should be back in the house getting dropped randomly. I actually think it was my roommate who tweaked some things because he didn't know I was doing a show tonight. And we live in a house, and the middle is kind of in between. The top is him, the bottom is me. So I don't even know if he thought he knew I was doing a show today. But anyway, it does suck for Joe Smith Jr., because it's another step, you know, in the right direction for him, you know, getting this win. Potentially it would have been, I should say. And the ref later in the fight even went over and said, hey, is everything okay? Because Joe, you're not fighting like you normally fight. Are you good? And you can kind of tell how he answered that. That I even wrote it down in my notes, like, huh. Yeah, that does seem a little strange. He's not fighting exactly the way he'd do it. So I believe I heard second, maybe third round. I believe it was second, though, when that happened. But anyway, moving on, Jezreel Corrales and Robinson Castellanos. Now, Castellanos is a guy that pretty hard-nosed guy. He got that win over Gamboa. He didn't really do much here. I'll give him credit for getting back in the fight, though. The first couple of rounds, I mean, the first three rounds, you know, it was all Corrales. Jezreel was busier. He was kind of throwing in aggression, kind of his little herky-jerky in-and-out style fight. Like I said, he was just busier, just outlanding him. Pretty much, I mean, there was some nice right hands. I remember even in the first round, there was a late right hand by Castellanos, but he didn't do much until, actually in the 30, finally landing something meaningful. It was a combination. But then he definitely had a meaningful seventh round, or fourth round. It was 10-7, that's what I was about to say. A left hook, like, literally 10 seconds in. Knockdown is more of a flash knockdown, whereas the next knockdown, I think it was a jab right hand, that was at the 145 mark. That was a full-on knockdown. Then for a good chunk of that round, that fourth round, it was two-way, back and forth. And he actually, yeah, it was on that knockdown, Corrales had actually bent over, ducking a jab, and he ran right into a punch. The only thing is, it was short-lived, because five out of the next four rounds, I gave three out of the four to Jezreel. I did give the six to Castellanos. I thought he landed the harder shots, and he was starting to really work the body. There was a knockdown in the seventh, actually. I forgot about that. It was a left hook. He actually blocked it on his glove. But it was scored a knockdown. The ninth round was a very competitive round. That's one you could have maybe gave to Castellanos. That's one you could have maybe done 10-10 possibly. I could see people giving that one to Castellanos. There was head clashes throughout this fight. Most of them accidental, but they kind of their styles blended that way. So it did. The fight was 30 seconds into the 10th round. The fight got stopped off of the cuts. And you had to score that round. And if you look at the round, sure, there wasn't much. I mean, it was only 30 seconds. But Jezreel did land two right hands that were clean in a body shot. So I did give him that round. 7-3 or 6-4 is how I had it. The punch stats were fairly close, though. Castellanos actually led 135-122. A lot of that was in the fourth round. In the sixth round as well. Corrales is a little busier, 506-414, but 33% compared to 24 for Castellanos as well. So I had it about 7-3. Maybe I could go 6-4, but that's a big maybe. Now, the main event, a lot of people, Burschelt in Miura, a lot of people thought this was, including myself, that this was just going to be a barn burn. Like, as far as barn burners go, I thought this and then the Figueroa-Guerrero fight, as far as just action, I was looking to those two to really give me that action. And Burchell actually started fast and never really let his foot off the gas. I mean, he mixed in the inside and the outside. You know, he showed he could box a little bit from the outside, no doubt about it. But he landed a left to the ear after, I think the first shot was a right hand that landed and knocked Miura down. And I was like, oh boy, you know, oh gosh, first round, he's already down. Oh, maybe Miura shouldn't have been in this fight, because we do know that he's really only got about left. He's got a left hand left, right? That's what he's got. He's got a left hand left in his arsenal, and that seemingly is about it. Beyond a ton of heart and a pretty damn good chin, really. It was competitive to an extent. I did pick Burchelt to win and win cleanly. I just thought getting there, it'd be a lot more competitive. You know, I really thought it would be a lot more competitive within the round. I actually didn't give Miura a round until, let me see my scorecard, to the, is it the eighth round? Maybe the seventh round. But, yeah, I gave him the eighth round. I believe it was the eighth round. And I gave him the tenth round. And that's about it. That's about it. Burchelt was, you know, outlanding him, outworking him. He was just kind of showing off all of his skills. In some of those rounds, especially the 10th round, Burchelt kind of just went into prevent defense mode. You know how you see that in the NFL where you're like, the cornerbacks are, you know, 10, 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, and you're like, the only thing prevent defense is preventing is being able to even come close to stopping the offense, because it's, I know it's, you know, there to take away the deep routes, but time and time again, we see teams get burnt on that prevent defense. But to me, he just easily handled them. A lot more easier than I thought. And he closed really strong, 245 to 134. He threw 745, Burchelt, so he was nice and busy, got the job done. And he really put himself in a good position, you know, for the future at 130. Some people think they should match the co-feature. That was kind of something that we had alluded to, and that would have been kind of cool. I don't know if you for sure can do that now, because it was kind of, I don't really want to see that rematch, but I don't know. The way it ended, I could see them having a rematch for it. But yeah, I hope they keep him fairly active. He fought in January, now he fought in July. Maybe he can get out one more time this year. Maybe it'll be early next year, and it still will be three fights in a, you know, not this, not a calendar year, but who cares about that? So yeah, it was a very good performance by Burchelt. He showed that he could mix it up, but still, or mix up his style, especially on the outside, but still remain active. On to the PBC on Fox. And by the way, when HBO and Showtime, or anybody really, but usually it's HBO and Showtime, obviously, when they go, when they're on the same night, even if they don't go head to head, they always drop each other's ratings. And the PBC on Fox was a super low rating. It's the lowest rating they've ever had for NBC or Fox or any of the PBC shows on the big networks, you know, on the free-to-air networks. It is the lowest one. And I figured it'd be right around 1.1, 1.2. It was lower than that. It peaked over a million. Not a big surprise there, but it was really, really low. And the HBO card did just mediocre. It did better than the January card featuring Burchelt and Miura on separate, you know, that was a good doubleheader actually, on separate cards or on separate in separate fights, which set this one up. But that's not really saying much to say, well, that they got a better rating than January, because that January rating, I believe, was their lowest boxing rating ever. From when they've been tracking ratings anyway, because it's not like they've been tracking ratings as much as they have, you know, in the last like 18, 20 years or something like that. So it always chunks off a couple hundred thousand on both sides, and that's exactly what it did. Not a big surprise, though, as far as the ratings. I did think it'd be over a million, though, for Fox, obviously. I thought it'd be about 1.1, 1.2, and peak 1.4 or whatever. And it was lower than that. I think it was 889 or 866 or whatever, and it peaked you know, a chunk over a million or whatever. Anyway, though, it still gave us good action. Heading into the weekend, I preferred the HBO card as far as the quality of fight. Not necessarily the action, but just what it would mean. They were more meaningful fights. But it turned out that the Fox card was a lot funner. And the best fight of the night, I thought, was Spilka and Kanoski. I thought that was hands down. I gave Spilka the first two rounds. The only thing Kanoski was really doing was getting to the body in those first couple of rounds, right? Spilka kind of scoring points, throwing his left hook, moving pretty well. He was just busier, landed combinations. You could see, though, in the second round, there were several exchanges, especially later, and then it kind of turned on him. And Spilka looked in great shape. He didn't, whereas Kanoski just kind of looked in fighter shape, but not really in good shape. When I say fighter shape, I mean he can fight, and he can fight without getting tired. Kind of like how Areola started, where you're like, okay, he's chubby. He's not going to look great, but he's training. You know, he can get through the fight without gassing out within a couple of rounds or whatever. You know what I mean? So, but after that, I mean, after the second round, the jab and lots of right hands landing really hard was the case pretty much after that. There were some early right hands in the fourth round. Probably a minute in, there was a barrage that started with the right hand that dropped Spilka. And he was definitely hurt. Spilka was on the move a lot. He kind of landed his little combo and then get out. But he was also being real silly and being, let's face it, just ignorant, stupid in the ring. I mean, he's putting his hands down. He's acting like the punches don't affect him. But you could tell real quick like that it affected him. And next thing you know, it's over. And he's not complaining about it either. So it's a big win from Kanoski. Really big win. And it wasn't a big crowd at the Nassau Casino. Or what is it? Is it Nassau? Nassau? Coliseum there in Long Island. First boxing event there in quite some time since it's been, redone. But tell, there was Polish people there, and then there was people there for Monahan, you know? And it wasn't big, and you could only, you know, a certain, actually, Luki and KH and Adam from the Boxing Boys, they did a podcast. Is it Kicking It with KH? I think that's what it is. He explained it really well. When this Polish versus Polish fight was on, there was people in sections, you know, 2-3 sections that were just full, right? And so it looked like a good crowd. Then it would kind of go away, right? And it came back and then went away, and there's probably, they said, like 3,000 people left after Shawnee, unfortunately, had, you know, for the home crowd, had gotten knocked out real quick, like, but it was an okay crowd for the middle of the summer and not having big names. I think they said the attendance was 7,000 or 8,000. Not really that big. I thought they could have potentially priced the tickets a little better, considering that this is the first event in Long Island in a long time. I think they probably could have done, it's not like the ticket prices were crazy, but they probably could have done that 25, 50, 100, 200 thing. And just establish a base, much like they did in Brooklyn. And then you can open it up. And, hey, some fights sell better than others. And you can always cut some prices, you know, in the last week or so. That happens a lot. In fact, that's happening with the Broner Garcia. It happens a ton, especially in a Vegas fight. But it happens a lot. And the veteran ticket buyers know, especially in Vegas. But some fights, man, especially dead middle of the summer, you just – you get good ticket prices, that's for sure. not much to speak of beyond Marcus Brown looking really good. I'd say like 40, 50 seconds in, flush left hand knocked him down. And it was a hard knockdown. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I thought maybe this would happen, you know, a little later in the fight. I didn't think it happened that quick. And he was really tagging him with more left hands to the point where there was a low blow that was kind of on the belt line. I thought Shawnee should have taken more time there, to be honest with you, since it was allotted to you, you know. But he was getting tagged the last part. It was not looking good. It was not looking good. Then a right hook hurt him. A left and a right combination, TKO, it was over. It was a wrap. It was done. So Marcus Brown, who took on K-Rod two Aprils ago in a really good competitive fight. He won a split decision. Probably should have been a draw. I could even see people that thought he lost the fight. But he's bounced back really well and scored two knockouts since then. So he's definitely on the rise, climbing that light heavyweight ladder that kind of stands out with Kovalev Ward as far as names. But the underbelly at light heavyweight, they should really do a tournament next year. I really think that. I think I was listening to Cheap Seats yesterday on my way to work. And they were talking about that as well, that might be a good idea. The underbelly of like 6 to 8 fighters is really interesting. Very, very interesting. And speaking of, Sullivan Barrera versus Kovalev would be really nice. I wonder, though, if that's something that they'd be interested in for his first fight back. On to the main event. In the main event, a lot of people had negativity heading into this week because they thought Guerrero was shot. Well, he's shot. If you did, you know, I was thinking it was going to be the bounce back, you know, because if you look at his last handful of fights, it's like every other fight he puts on a good performance or shows you something about him. Even that Thurman fight for like 7-8 rounds, he was getting, you know, handled, right? But when he got knocked down, it looked like he was going to get stopped. But he got up and he fought really hard. In fact, I remember getting text messages like, man, that Guerrero is a tough dude to, like, casual fans. And then he fought really well against Danny Garcia. Now, he didn't win, but 8-4, 7-5 or something like that, where a lot of people thought that was a complete mismatch, turned out to be a good fight. So I got to admit, I picked Guerrero. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't know what to think of Figueroa because he'd been off so damn long, you know? So, to me, I just thought this was going to be an action fight. But I also thought there'd be a mixture, much like from Guerrero, much like Burchelt, how he was, you know, in the mix, but he was also on the outside being smart. I kind of felt that way about Guerrero. Was I wrong? Yes, I was. Yes, I was. And the thing about boxing, you know, Father Time's undefeated. Oh, he's getting old in there. He looks old. There's really no other sport that treats you this way when you get old. Like, when you get old, it's vicious. You know, I remember Steve Young in preseason getting hit from the side, looking like he died on the field, right? There's times where Troy Aikman, the last couple of games, last year or so, just getting destroyed. He didn't have that great offensive line anymore, that he could just sit back in that pocket and from the 5 or 7 yard line, they could just hand it off to Smith and he'd walk on in. That wasn't the case. He was getting freaking hit. So it's a vicious, I remember McMahon, I thought he, speaking of someone that died on the field, I really thought he died during I think it was the Giants playoff game. I don't know if you guys remember that one, but man, he looked dead on the field. But anyway, the first round, I was like, this is what I'm talking about. Guerrero's got the bounce back, dude. He's working the body. He's landing flush shots to the head. Figueroa's kind of slumped over. He's kicking his ass. You know what I mean? Like, wow, Guerrero looks fresh, dude. And his body, I'll say this, his chin, his punch resistance is gone, right? Because he's always had a pretty good chin. Or I shouldn't say pretty, a very good chin. It's gone. And you could tell because his body itself looked great, whereas obviously we know Figueroa, who's never going to win a, you know, an 8-pack or 6-pack or a pack, for that matter, contest, no doubt about it, on the scale and in the ring. But he came out after looking kind of shaky. He was on the ropes. Actually, Guerrero did start the round really well. But an uppercut off the ropes kind of started a flurry, a rally of uppercuts, and it caused a knockdown. Then there was a bunch of great action there for a chunk of time, maybe 45 seconds, something like that. The last 30 seconds, a double right hand caused another knockdown. And a body shot, and I think like a partial left hand, and so you're like, dude, holy cow, what's going on here? Like, wow, that was pretty crazy. You know what I mean? That shook me a little bit. If anybody was getting TKO'd or knocked out, well, first of all, I thought it'd be a TKO where someone just the wear and tear is just too much. But I thought that'd be mid rounds for sure. Both these guys are warriors. Both these guys, you know, fight firefights all the time. So, but like I said, there's really no other sport that when you're old, it shows and there's no running from it. There's no running from it. You got to give Guerrero a lot of credit, no matter what you thought about this fight. It's weird because sometimes people go brawl for brawl, like Francisco Vargas and Burchell earlier this year. A lot of people were saying, oh, that was the best fight and this and that, and they weren't giving two shits about Francisco. Some people thought it got sad after a while. In such a longer fight, that was a longer fight. I did start to go, okay, dude, I'm good. I wasn't crazy about Vargas in the ring anyway, just because he had been, like when we say Guerrero looked faded, he hadn't been in the wars, though, that Vargas had been in, you know, of late. I'm just saying of late. I'm not saying overall. I'm just saying of late. Guerrero, though, the true warrior he is, he comes out, lands a huge left hand. He comes out swinging in the third round. You're thinking, oh, shit, dude, he's back. This might go more rounds. Yeah, that wasn't the case. I'd say 3 or 4 more uppercuts, a nice right hand, another knockdown, a right hand to the head, left hook to the body. It was a wrap. It was done. He was done. For Figueroa, where do you go here? At 147, I don't like his chances, clearly. That's not really some kind of deep, you know, breakdown, right? At 147 is going to be his best weight. Or I'm sorry, at 140. At 140, that's his best weight. Now, can he stay disciplined to make it? We'll see. Now, let's get a couple of things straight. Because I've heard on a lot of podcasts, on Twitter, YouTube, yada, 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 that Figueroa came into camp at 190 and he had 8 weeks to take it off. That's just not true from what I understand. Because sometimes when they talk about stuff when a fight's on, you're with your friends or you hear it, but you're seeing something and it was really like live action right in front of you. So he wasn't 190 in May. Like mid-May, he wasn't 190. They said he took 13 months off, so that was December 2015 to January. He came into camp in January 190. So he basically had a fat camp to lose a bunch of weight. I'm sure he took a little time off, then maybe kept busy, then took some time off, and then got into camp. So he did in May, like, what was it, May, July 15th? In May 15th, he wasn't 190 pounds. So let's straighten that out. Now, he obviously was fat. He obviously has had issues. He obviously loves to drink and eat food. A lot of people do. A lot of boxers do. But you got to be smart about it, obviously. Now, if you're going to heal your hands in your body overall, but especially your hands, I do think there were some personal problems in there as well. Because the way he talked about certain things going on in his life, not just the hands, but in his life after that DeMarco fight, it leads me to believe that he was having some personal issues too, because he didn't want to talk about it, and he probably would have talked about it, you know? So I'm kind of in the minority here. I think he can make 140 still. Now, I say I think. I didn't say he can make it. You know what I mean? Because he's probably drinking craft beer, like he said, right now. And who knows how much he even weighs right now, right? So who really knows about that? But anyway, it was a good performance by Figueroa. I know a lot of people haven't given him a ton of credit. But I thought it was a good performance. And like I said, Guerrero is completely shot now. His punch resistance is now shot. So that's when you know you got to get out, and hopefully he stays out. Because the way his body was reacting to the punches, it didn't look good. And then it was one-sided. But it was not even three rounds, and he won a round in one chunks of the other part. So I wasn't as sad watching it until the end. It was like, okay, stop the fight. We're done. We're good. It's over, you know? So I had fun watching it. But had it gone on later in the fight, I probably would have started turning to, okay, dude, this is sad now. And I said stop the fight. Like, I was saying, okay, it's a good time to stop the fight. But had that happened a little later, you know, I may have started turning, you know, into more, ooh, this is getting ugly now. You know what I mean? I did think people kind of went over the top. I know it's PBC and Al Heyman. I thought people went a little over the top because, like I said, I saw Burchelt Vargas. And I, for one, at the end of the fight, was saying, okay, dude, you can stop this fight any frickin' time. And the last handful of rounds got more one-sided where you're like, oh, shit, dude, stop the fight. You know what I mean? And, you know, like I mentioned, I thought he shouldn't even been in that fight right then. But that's neither here or there. But it was an action-packed fight. It's just funny how people pick and choose what's action to them. In Portland, I'm going to go to you and let you get your thing in here, too. I'm just going to breeze through this because the showbox, I didn't get a chance to see the main event because my recording was all messed up because we had a storm. So I did get to see Josh Greer Jr. handle business. I think it was a fifth round or sixth round TKO? I think it was uppercuts that he basically handled the fight. I mean, he scored almost a knockdown with a right hand in the first round. So a very good performance. He was using his right hand a lot, left hooks as well. The guy he fought, Leroy Davila, he had a little success, but not much. Adam Lopez and Glenn DeJurin, that was a draw, actually. Really competitive fight. Very competitive fight. I had it either 3-1 or 2-2 after the fourth round. But I don't know, man. Like, DeJurin, he looked pretty good. He was outlanding him through four. And I think I didn't get what were the stats here? 148 to 157. So, obviously, both guys landed a lot through eight rounds. And then 494 for DeJurin. And DeJurin, he had the more punches. 494 to 449, both over 30%. So that was pretty good. But I thought Lopez was in control. Well fought from 5 to 7, but I thought Lopez was in control. It was just a good fight. I thought Lopez kind of ended a little better with pressure. I was watching it with some friends, so I didn't really score it round by round as much as I normally do. Like I said, that main event, it screwed me because I saw bits and pieces, but not enough, to talk too much about it. Real quick though, there was a good fight, with Cowboy Carl, I believe his name is. He fought a hard fight. He won the fight, but it was a good fight on Toe to Toe Tuesday on FS1. But the main event, Miguel Flores and Chris Avios, that was a good-ass scrap. I gave Flores the first round. I thought he landed the bigger shots. Another competitive round in the second round, whereas this time I thought Avalos won the second round on the better shots. two-way round in the third. I think there was a left hook. Was that in the third round, the left hook? That's like, yeah, I think it was the left hook that dropped him. Jab left hand, I think was the combination that got it done. I gave Abbios, though, the fifth, early and late. He closed really well, landed combinations. And the fourth round, it was a great round. Both guys landed flush. That was like a 10-10 round to me. Now, they gave Chris Abbios the fight because the cuts that Flores got, Miguel Flores got a cut, and it was starting to get really bad. And you could see it was one of those cuts that was like, you know, right above the eye, not on the eyebrow, but the actual lid, you know, on the eyelid. So that's always a dangerous one. But the problem was it didn't go to the cards. They said, the ref said that it was a punch that did it. Now, they did clash heads from time to time accidentally. But as far as what I could see, they never really got to that shot where it was a headbutt, and then you could see, okay, there's the cut. So I think they should have a rematch, because that was a good-ass scrap to me. And I'm telling you what, these PBC Toe-to-Toe Tuesdays have been solid, dude. And when did they start? I think it was fall 2015 that they started these. Now, they take little breaks throughout the year, like early in the year and just, you know, at times, but they've been solid, man. And if Golden Boy was producing this, it would get a lot more, you know, credit, especially with the media. They'd be talking about it. Now, I'm not sitting there saying these are just some awesome elite events and it's the best fighting the best, but it has that prospect versus prospect, veteran versus veteran, prospect stepping up against a veteran. Every once in a while, you get like a title eliminator in there. I remember Murat Gassiev scored a crazy knockdown about a year and change ago, 2 months ago, I think it was, to move on to be able to fight Lebedev. So these have just been solid. They're borderline getting closer and closer to Showbox. Now, I would never put the two together, because this thing is like a year and a half old, almost 2 years old. So whereas Showbox has been around a lot longer, and it's just better overall. But I really like what I see on these Toe-to-Toe Tuesdays, and it's really too bad. You know, I mean, if you look at the ESPN2 shows that Golden Boy's done, I think the last two have kind of been a little lackluster, but I think the other three, has it been three or four? I think three of them have been really solid. I've enjoyed those as well. But, you know, and obviously like a guy like Dan Raphael is going to talk about what's on ESPN more. But if you're going to give credit to Golden Boy's card, which we have with the ESPN2 cards, you got to give credit to these Toe-to-Toe Tuesdays, man. And I've said it before plenty of times, the mid-level and prospect fights now that are on, like, pretty much basic cable that pretty much everybody has. Not everybody has Bounce. But I mean, and not everybody has, you know, some of these, Hispanic based channels, not everybody has those, but you can find it usually, you know, you can find some sort of recording of it. And we have an abundance. And now with this new Top Rank ESPN deal, we got even more fights with names too. And hopefully they, produce some, you know, something, you know, a couple times a year, like Crawford and Dongo, or a big, big fight, not just a name going against the showcase. But anyway, that's that. I'm going to go to Portland in just a second. I want to talk about a couple of things. One of them is Deontay Wilder versus Luis Ortiz. And we heard that the fight is almost done. But then we heard real quickly after that that Stavern had hired Jay Prince and another lawyer to try to stop this, because he's the mandatory and he's not taking step aside money, which sucks, right? It does suck. Now, from what I understand is what they're trying to work out right now is potentially making like Deontay Wilder or maybe in this case, maybe Deontay Wilder for the WBC, make him Empress champion. Therefore, then maybe Stavern would have to fight someone for the belt. So it'd be the real belt, although not real, but you know, whatever. And then that the winner would have to face the winner of Wilder or Ortiz. Or maybe, you know, we all know unifications. You know, unifications can supersede beyond what, the IBF or something like that. Although, actually, it's taking place right now. Limpinets, I believe Limpinets took some step-aside money to make Ndongo and Crawford happen. But if they can, I mean, we're already in these so many belts and interim belts and, you know, Pan-American belts and North American belts and, you know, we're already swimming in this sludge of the alphabetic swamp soup, the swampy soup, right? The alphabetic shit. And who cares? You know, whatever they can jimmy rig up, whatever they can get done to get Wilder and Ortiz in the ring in November, sign me up. I don't care if it's the goofiest excuse. I don't give two shits, to be honest, because who cares? The belt system's a joke anyway. We need Wilder and Ortiz. Then he can take that, you know, Mando thing and move on. Or even what about, I'm not sure about that one, but I was going to say a fight, but I'm not sure if that would, I don't know where the rankings are. And of course, that's what all this stuff comes down to, is which, you know, sanctioning body has you ranked and where. So let's hope they can get this thing figured out, because man, almighty, Wilder and Ortiz is exactly what we need. Now, a couple other fights that are either being, you know, getting figured out right now or kind of on the rumor mill or are set. There is one that I'm kind of interested in. Mick Joe Arroyo and Rasheed Warren on kind of late notice, or not kind of, late notice. They're fighting on the undercard next week. That could be interesting with their styles. That could definitely be interesting in their styles. Also, in the works for, I believe, September 30th, if I remember correctly, Charlo versus Lubin, and this is obviously 154, not Jermall, but Jermell Charlo versus Erickson Lubin, a guy who scored a highlight reel knockout earlier in March. And the co-feature would be Jarrett Hurd and Austin Trout. Now, sign me up for that card. That would be bomb. I would really, 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 really like that card. Like I said, sign me up. By the way, I got to say it because it's my last name, but Carlos Carlson got upset today. Man, I feel for him as a fellow Carlson. No, but that was an upset, actually. That was a fairly big upset. They are starting to get some dates together for that World Boxing Super Series. Another date that just got figured out, I'm seeing it on Boxing Scene right now, is Brites versus Perez. And that'll be in his hometown, and that's on September 30th. I wonder if they're not going to do a full day thing where they are not a full day, but you know, they have something from overseas, and then they have a card at night. That's usually done pretty good for them, and that's always fun, man. And by the way, I forgot to mention, Chris Eubank Jr. did get the job done against Arthur Abraham, so now he is officially in that super middleweight portion of the World Boxing Super Series, the WBSS, right? Let's hope there's not a lot of BS when it comes to decisions, because I think that's really the only thing that can derail it completely is a bad, bad, poor decision or something like that. But that's to be expected because that's boxing, right? It happens. But that's the only thing that kind of worries me about that. But anyway, I'm not going to preview any fights next weekend. nothing like that. We'll be back Wednesday. I just wanted to kind of get this out there. I got some requests to do it, and like I said, I meant to do it on Thursday. Portland, I'm going to go to you in just a second here. By the way, of course, you could check out here, you know, you could check out here. What am I saying, dude? You can check the podcast out right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio, which you're doing right now, potentially, if you're listening live. It are archives there as well, but of course, on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Player FM, etc. You can find the Rope It Up Radio podcast. It's all boxing right now, but late August, we'll be back with the College Ball Show too, which is a weekly show for college football. Then it moves later in January to college basketball. Then later in April, it moves to the NBA. We had our NBA free agency show not long ago, and all of a sudden, some pretty big news in the NBA with Kyrie wanting to request a trade because he wants to be the main man with the ball in his hand and doesn't want to play with LeBron anymore. Wow, dude. So Scottie Pippen sucks, huh? He's not a top 50 player all time. You can't handle that. Wow. That's pretty crazy. But anyway, back to boxing. Big weekend coming up. Broner versus Garcia. I'm really feeling this. Actually, Mauricio Herrera and Jesus Soto Carras is, I believe, a main event for the ESPN2 fight on Friday as well. That's all I'm going to say. Like I said, we'll be back Wednesday, so it's just going to be normal things. So actually, I didn't miss a week. You can't count that as me missing a week. I've only missed a week this year in the beginning of January because we do the wrap-up show, and then we had a gap off, and then we got going into the year. So I only missed 1 week so far, and it kind of needed to be missed because it was in a time where it's a holiday season and all that. You know, usually it's just once or twice a year that I miss a week. Vacation got in the way last week, but not really because I still did the show. So it counts. Anyway, like I said, sign me up for Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz, man. Sign me the F up. I hope that fight happens. They got to do something. Give Stavern a belt. I don't care. Get him away. You know what I mean? I need this Wilder-Ortiz fight, dude. I need it. That'd be a good fight. Anyway, I'm going to go out to Portland. My guy 503 out in Portland. What's going on, man? How you doing? Portland, you there? Maybe you're on mute. You potentially could be on mute, Portland. You
yeah,
there?
Yeah. Well, what up? Yo, I'm here. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, brother. What's going
all
on?
Right,
yeah,
sweet.
I hear you.
All right. Cool, man. Yeah, I was on mute. Yeah, I was on mute for a second. Thanks for reminding me to push the button. That's funny. Yeah, man, just doing good. Yeah, just doing good, man. You know, enjoying this Saturday. It's beautiful here in Portland. It's sunny. The sun is out. The wind is blowing. The birds are chirping. So it's like it's beautiful out here. And I'm about to you know hit the heavy bag and get my workout in. So, you know, what better way to get motivated by talking boxing and talking my favorite sport and talking to Christopher Carlson, my favorite boxing podcast, the Rope-A-Dope Radio. So, you know what I mean? So I'm here, baby. I'm here. I'm a soldier. You know what I mean? So let's do it, baby. And
yeah,
you were talking about Stavern, just, you know, give him a belt or, you know, don't get in the way. How about you just give him a fight, man? Because when was the last time we heard of Stavern? When he fought Wilder fucking in 2015 or something? Like, dude, where the
seriously,
hell is he been,
man?
Dude? Like, you know
what I
mean? I
know.
Like,
that's why it's so weird that he was even ranked high enough to get that Mando fight with Povetkin.
Yeah.
I get the Povetkin thing. That's not his fault. But just, you know, go down the ratings and put the next guy in then and have them fight for the Mando spot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's crazy, man. It's just Stavern, man. Like, you know, just consider yourself lucky you're still being ranked that high. You know what I mean? Like, don't get in the way of this fight, man. I know he's itching to get that Wilder rematch, but let Wilder and Ortiz get their dance going, and and, you know, maybe you get the winner or something, or, you know, take a fight under the undercard and, you know, try to get a get a win that way or something. You know what I mean? Like, or fight another top big guy, man. Jarrell Miller is looking for a dance partner, and I mean, he's got a fight, but obviously, I don't know if you got to see a video, their video that is pretty funny where Jarrell Miller was, like, taunting him at his gym. And then they fucking, you know, fucking Shannon Briggs had to go break it up because these guys almost got into a street fight. I don't know if you got to see that. But
I did
it was kind
see
of
that.
Funny,
I
you know?
Did see that clip.
Yeah, so, yeah, and I don't know, man. To be honest, yeah, Stavern needs to step out of the way and not get in the way of Deontay versus Ortiz, man, because I'm just like you, Chris. I want to see that fight, too. And, you know, that's a fascinating fight for me, man. And, but yeah, man, let's recap this last weekend's fights, man. Let's start. I'm gonna start off with the PBC, you know, Robert the Ghost Guerrero,
yeah,
versus Figueroa. And, you know what, man? I don't know, man, but you know, I wish 310 was on today because I would really like to hear his opinion on this because, man, in my opinion, that fight looks phony, baloney to me, and I want to say, and I don't know, I don't think it was fixed where Figueroa knew he was going to win, but I want to say that I just felt that Guerrero knew he wasn't going to win. He knew he was going to go down, and I felt that it was going to be a short night, and like after, you know, because like with those punches, man, like you said earlier, Chris, like, you know, that first round, Guerrero looked, you know, he looked good. You know, he fought off the distance, and, you know, he was landing some shots and you know, kind of frustrated Figueroa there for a moment. But then after that, you know, but then when that second round came in, but you know, he got those few knockdowns. But, like, it's just, like, just the ending of that fight where he got him in the body shot, it was kind of just seemed a little, you know, kind of like, all right, I'll go down here. It's fine. You know, like, all right, whatever. You know what I mean? The fight's
over,
whatever.
Yeah, the way his body responded to a couple of those uppercuts, too, was kind of like, huh, yeah, I know what you mean. It was almost we're packing it in. It is what it is. I'm going to move on.
Yeah, that's what I felt it was, man. I mean, when he fought that Argentinian dude, I mean, he fought, man. He was trying to win. Like, he fucking was trying his hard.
Yeah.
He was trying hard. But with this Figueroa fight, it was kind of like, you know, I'm gonna come in here, I'm going to fight his style, and, you know, I'm gonna try to get hit. And then there was those few times where he had Figueroa up against the ropes, and it kind of seemed like he was waiting to get hit, like he was waiting to get countered. And it was kind of like, I don't know, man. I was watching it with my brothers, and like they thought it was real, but like to me, man, I just had some sort of like, you know, it looked a little phony baloney. Like it
I know
just looked a little odd to me. Yeah, yeah. So
it was
I just
like
to mention that real
snap
quick.
To his neck. It was like like he was adding an extra snap to the neck show how much my neck is bending. There was two of them that stood out to me. You know, somebody said, because the first handful of them landed hard, and I was like, oh, shit, you know? And they looked just fine. Or, you know, not to him, they didn't look good, but, you know, they look legit. But someone pointed that out on Twitter to me, and I went back and watched it, and especially near the end. Two of them stood out to where I thought, either he's trying to show it a tad more to get out of there, or his punch resistance is just done. You know what I mean? And it did sound like, now that we've actually heard some whispers that he had a concussion early in that fight. And there was a moment I went back and checked that out, and it did kind of look like he had a walking concussion in that fight. So maybe that's it. But, yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Especially two of those uppercuts that stood out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like he was being over dramatic, and you know that he was like, you know, just got overacting in my opinion. But it's like
keeping his head right there too without looking. You're like,
yeah,
hey, dude,
yeah, exactly.
Hey, uppercut, you know.
Yeah, and but yeah, that was kind of cool, you know. And I mean, he announced his retirement, and you know, I think it's the best time to do it. Like I just. Because Guerrero, man, like, you know what I mean? He's had a long career, and especially at 147, it just doesn't seem to be going his way. So, you know, it just seems to be like, you know, every fight is tougher than the other. And, you know, you shouldn't be in these tough fights, especially when you're fighting a cab driver, you know, in Argentina. And, you know, that dude, you should have taken that dude away. And, you know, you should have made it easy. But for some reason, you decided to, you know, to go at him, and, you know, it cost you the fight. But I don't know, man. He definitely is a fan's favorite fighter, like, in my opinion. Like, I've always loved watching him, even at the lighter weights. And but it just seems like, you know, this is a perfect time for him, man. But in all honesty, man, I'm gonna say it right now. I don't think he's like officially retired. I think he's like Floyd Mayweather retired. You know what I mean? Like, he's gonna take 2 years off, and then he's gonna come back after the 2 years, and you know what I mean? Because eventually, man, he's still pretty young. You know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? So I just feel like eventually he's gonna come back later, and maybe 2 years, 3 years from now. But I think he's just gonna let himself rest and not worry about boxing, like the, you know, all the, you know, politics and, you know, the, you know, the money and all that stuff. And you know, he's not gonna worry about that now. So I think he just wants time with his family and, you know, God obviously, and his dad and all that shit. But like, in my opinion, I think, you know, we haven't seen the last of Guerrero, man. I feel like we are gonna see him maybe 2 years from now. But I'm just, you know what I mean, I'm just calling it right now, because, you know, sometimes these boxers, man, they love to say they're retired and then all of a sudden they come back. So, because I mean, shit, dude. I mean, you know, I mean, look at the long list of people that have said that they retired and all of a sudden they come back. So, you know, and then these days, man, you know, fucking, you know, everybody needs money. So, you know what I mean? And especially with Guerrero, he's got it. I'm sure he's making a lot of money every fight. So, you know what I mean? So eventually he's going to need that paycheck again. So, but if this is his retirement and he's 100%, you know, doing it and, you know, 100%, you know, out of boxing, well, then, you know, I say, you know, thank you for all the great fights you've given us, all the, you know, blood, sweat, and tears you shed in the ring. And, you know, I hope you, you know, enjoy retirement with your family and everything like that. But if I could give you a little word of advice, stay away from CrossFit, you know what I mean? Maybe you damaged your body that way or something, because, like, man, the CrossFit people, man, those dudes are full of fucking injuries all day, man. Like, you talk to them, their knee hurts, their back hurts, their fucking neck hurts. Like, maybe, I don't know, I'll tell them to stay away from CrossFit and just fucking, you know, get a better trainer. I don't know, but, you know what I mean? But as far as Figueroa, man, like you were saying earlier, man, I, you know, his, I'm kind of a little